Hi, everybody. Dennis Black here for Black and Wyatt Records. Welcome to the Black and Wyatt Records podcast. Today, Memphis artist and filmmaker Mike McCarthy interviews Black and Wyatt artists Seth Moody and Graham Winchester of the Turnstiles. Now, here's Mike McCarthy.
Hey.
Graham Winchester.
How's it going, guys?
It's the
It's the alt band title of Moody Winchester that I always thought you guys should have went with because it sounds menacing.
As long as Moody's first.
Moody Winchester.
Yeah.
Can't have the drummer last name first.
I imagine like a salty guy from the 1800s.
It's Moody Winchester.
Who founds Memphis in 1820.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
With a general and a president.
Are you related to James Winchester?
I am.
Seriously?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Tell me.
He's a great, 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 great granddad or something.
So I mean, your great, 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 great grandfather co-founded Memphis with John Overton and Andrew Jackson.
Yeah.
Wow.
His son Marcus was the first mayor. Marcus Winchester.
So how come I didn't hear about you until like maybe 13 years ago?
Because I'm not into politics.
Not yet.
Not yet. That's right. I've been encouraged to run for like stuff, but I've...
By who?
Declined. A lot of Midtowners. I don't want to name any names.
Just wait till you're 40.
Just influential Midtown people with money have approached me about doing politics. Music is political enough for me. I'm good.
Political drummer.
Political drama.
To a different drummer.
Just keep sacrificing goats to the devil in the backyard. I'm just about to run out of goats.
That's the real...
That's the footage that I cut out of the doc.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I was...
Because then it doesn't work. Lucifer right. Does not reward those that flaunt his glory.
And now we're losing listeners. So those three people are gone.
We're gaining them. All the goat sacrifice people are going to love us.
So you guys didn't need tequila before the podcast tonight.
No.
I didn't know we had any.
Just a bunch of pizza. I've got a lot of tequila now, though, because my birthday was last week. And the number one gift people... brought were bottles of tequila
because they'd seen the doc.
Yeah,
because they're mad and he's so young.
Age,
I mean, people. To, yeah, you were 30. You were 30. Him. You freshly 36. So,
looking rough, Graham.
Trying to kill him.
Is it because he had 42 bottles of tequila?
I'm wearing the Ninja Turtle shirt to combat my new aging process.
And it's teal.
It's teal. Tequila.
Tequila teal. So I made a little documentary. We'll just get that out of the way. Two weeks ago, whatever. You guys like it?
I love it.
So
yeah, it's fun.
People think you're heavy drinkers now?
I was a little worried about that. But then I thought, well, what am I worried about?
I thought the same. And then I was like, well, we're filming us recording and playing and rocking together. So why not have tequila?
You only see us taking...
What are we going to...
You only see us taking two shots. It takes 24 to get me rolling.
Yeah, I mean,
I thought there was more than two.
It wouldn't have the same effect if we were doing everything we did in the dog and eating, like, crackers and drinking water.
I mean, we're not just upending the bottle and rolling around on the floor.
Sacrificing goats.
Oh, Graham crapped his pants. I guess we're not recording a song tonight. Well, give me that tequila before he gets crap on it.
That's the new song, Graham Crapped His Pants.
I think that what, I guess so.
Let's make that.
I mean, it's just a couple little nips, you know. It's more the going to get it and yay, let's get our heads in the right place.
Hey, at least we got the driving done before the drinking.
You know, we're going to be authentic Memphis.
I've actually drawn you, filmed you. Played on stage with you, or I sang on stage with you.
There's a couple more things you could do to make us really tight.
Should we
take a break?
No, I just wonder when I'm getting invited over for dinner.
Right
at this point, or maybe a free haircut. I know you don't
free haircut.
It.
Do you like goat?
I can give out free
haircuts.
We'll
have a goat roast. Yeah.
What, if we were going to play a Turnstile song, or maybe we should play somebody else's songs. I don't know. But you sent over a couple of Turnstiles songs from Turnstiles 2, which we could talk about.
We had tequila when we were recording those songs.
Yeah,
it was mostly during the pandemic because we were in a pod, right?
Mm-hmm.
Graham and my wife and I were working on those songs because we had nothing else to do in the basement.
We hold up most nights of each week, really.
Yeah, whenever I did my vocals, they would sit to the side and drink the tequila and make fun of me. I got so upset I just ran out of the house and like walked two blocks away and sat down on the curb for about 20 minutes. I ran out the basement
out the house. I looked at Coco, you know, eyes wider than, and we were just like, okay, maybe we waited for about 10 minutes. He didn't come back. Like, okay, let's go find Seth. But he had walked down the street.
You guys sound, I mean, the record sounds fantastic.
Well, it was a lot of fun, yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
Heard it at the Listening Lab.
Thank you, thanks.
And I know you sent those songs over today. Let's play one.
It's on the list.
Why don't we do, since we start our live shows off lately with it, Dead Surfer.
Oh, yeah, that was
that's kind of like
one
our,
of the first ones we recorded.
All right, so here are the Turnstiles off Turnstiles 2, the double album with Dead Surfer. That was Dead Surfer. Any stories behind that one? Is that why you're a two-piece?
That was mainly Seth, you wrote that.
Yeah, I wrote that. Actually, it's really old. I wrote it when I lived in Athens, Georgia, and lived in this crazy house called the Porn Orchard House, because the band that I lived with was called Porn Orchard. Anyway, I did it on the 4-track and just kept it around and brought it back to try to keep up with Graham's songwriting prowess. He spits them out. I'm like, oh my God, he's got 4 new songs. I only have 2. So let me go get this old one.
Yeah,
so
I
pulled it from my archives and reworked it a little bit. I don't like to think that I'm leaning on my younger self.
But then there's the Athens days, but then he's got Wilmington days, he's got Texas days.
Why don't we talk about those days?
Seth's lived all over the country, really. Wait,
where are you from and what are you all about?
I don't know what I'm about yet, but I've lived in Athens, Savannah, Georgia, Dallas, Texas, Kansas City. I've done about a bit of everything. I've done the touring thing with this ridiculous band called Billy Goat back in the early 90s. Yeah, I know. Jeez.
It's all going full circle.
I know. Think I'm beginning. Satan's to... never going to. I'm going to have to start sacrificing rabbits now because I've outed the goat.
Sacrificing rabbits sounds like an Athens band name.
It does.
It does.
Sacrificing rabbits.
Athens was exhausting because it's so cool there. Mm-hmm. You can't like the scene if you're in Athens. Or if you're a part of the scene, you hate it.
So Athens is like the southern Austin.
Yeah, or it's got more of an East Coast vibe to it. Mm-hmm. It's like a southern Austin with a little bit of Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Nose Riders and the Carvers in Wilmington, amongst other bands like a Hawaiian band, and et cetera. Yeah, Athens, I was in a few punk bands. Because I was in Dallas, Texas, before I moved to Athens and learning jazz.
Wait, what years are we talking about?
Yeah, late 80s. So I was, going through high school. I went through to a arts magnet school.
In Dallas?
Yeah, okay. Learned music theory and all that stuff. Hmm. But then all the jazz cats, as they got towards their senior year, all their heroes... were heroin users. So all of a sudden, you go to a party in high school and it's not a keg of beer, it's some guys doing smack in the bathroom. Like, I'm not into that.
Yeah.
I mean, jazz is fun, but
John Coltrane
Lord.
Did it though.
Yeah, that's where he got inspired. But so wait, I'm going to try it.
Well, you're just like 18 at that point.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. I'm a kid. So I'm like, what? No way. So I was into the rock and roll that I was into. I was a big fan of the B-52s, their early stuff and stuff like that. So I figured, fuck this jazz stuff. My parents can get me in as a in-state tuition in Athens. It has a great music scene in 1988. I saw the movie Athens, Georgia, Inside Out. Remember that? And Dex, Rahm Weber, all those cats. So I went there and put down the upright bass and picked up an electric and
prayed that the B-52s weren't heroin addicts.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, they were, yeah. Long since left.
What were they into?
Disco night.
I mean, chemically.
Oh, probably cocaine.
You Lord. Think?
Really? Late 70s.
Oh, well, okay.
And you jammed with Dex Rahm Weber and recorded with him, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I played sax with him. Fun, crazy guy.
So you were in Athens when you were 19, 20, 21?
Yep.
Wow.
19, 20, 21 is when I left. And I joined the band Billy Goat, who were stationed in Lawrence at that point.
Stationed.
Yeah, they were a touring band. Mm-hmm. They moved to a more central spot of the U.S. to make touring easier.
Did your parents realize that they had raised a musician who was just going to hop around the United States?
Oh, they hopped around the
United
States.
Did they? Okay. Why? How? Tell me about that just real quick.
Just divorces and whatnot. Not military, just, well, I just started dating this guy and he moved to Dallas, so we're moving to Dallas.
Oh, God. Well, your mom and dad were musicians?
My mother sang. My dad wanted to play the flute but couldn't figure it out. But my grandfather was a jazz pianist, and my grandmother was a jazz singer. Then, I got married, and then within 2 months of being married, I got a phone call from a guy who ended up playing with Korn.
Speaking of.
Called up and said, I'm in this band. We're on Warner Brothers. Our bass player just quit. Can you be here by next Saturday? And I muted the phone and I said, honey. And she's like, oh, that sounds great, go for it. So for the next year and a half, I toured around.
And this was
guys.
Who
Billy Goat.
Oh, this was Billy Goat. Okay.
Edie Brickell and the New Bohemians.
Yeah,
the New Bohemians, when she got giant, they split off, and then one of their split offs, it was like a spinoff band, was this.
But it led you to where you are. Some, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And, so, then you went where?
Made it, I went back to where my wife was in Augusta, Georgia, which was god awful. She was going to medical school there for physical therapy. I didn't have anything to do other than wait. Or no, I didn't even wait 10. It was a wash dishes in a restaurant and recorded stuff on a 4-track. I remember, New Year's Eve, after I quit that band, usually, you know, on a New Year's Eve in a band like that, you're playing some high-profile gig, lots of money, big woohoo. This New Year's Eve, I was in the kitchen eating bits of filet mignon that people didn't finish off their plates and drinking their leftover champagne.
Okay, so Augusta, then what?
Then Wilmington. I went to Wilmington because they didn't have a recording studio that was for normal people. They had like some kind of fancy pants one that recorded cover bands. So I figured, ooh, I know how to record. Me and a couple other musician friends that lived in L.A. and Philadelphia at the time went in on some equipment, and I set up shop with my wife in a commercial rental in Wilmington, and did that for 5 years.
Did you surf?
Yeah, I surfed. Mm-hmm. Not very well, but I did it because it's exercise and it's fun. Yeah, one morning I was out there like 5 o'clock in the morning. The sun wasn't even up and I was half awake. I'm paddling around. And you know, when you're surfing, you have a leash that you tie onto your ankle. Mm-hmm. So you don't, if the board goes flying, you don't lose it. So the leash was not attached to my ankle. It was just floating behind the board. And it was far enough away. I'm paddling around. And I saw something out of the corner of my eye, and I looked back, nothing. So I'm paddling around again. I see something out of the corner of my eye again. I look real quick, and I see it go down under the water. I thought, oh, my God, it's a shark. But it was the leash.
By God.
For like 10 minutes, I'm going around in circles with my heart rate going up and up. Like, oh, my, it's following me. A lot of my recordings were just a terrible bands. Man, there was one band, the drummer, every time he went to do a fill, he'd screw it all up.
Well, would you step in and play tracks?
No, what I did was I was like, let me hold on to this. Y'all come back next week and I'll play you the mix. So on all his fuck ups, I would put like a sound effect, like a bowling ball or lightning. And they were like a hard
rock.
They were a hard rock band. So they loved it. They were sitting on the floor with their 40-ounce malt liquors like, whoa, did you hear that? It was a spaceship landing when you did that fill.
Next drum fill I mess up on a record, we're putting a UFO landing over it.
Went to Microsoft certified systems engineer training in Raleigh.
To hell with music.
I cut my hair short, bought an ill-fitting polo shirt and plaid pants. Or no, not plaid, khaki pants.
Thanks for wearing that over tonight, by the way.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah. It's right off the golf course.
So I, you know, tried to grow up.
Had you heard of all the things that had been happening in Memphis or Graham? I mean, you were younger, but did you know of all the stuff that was happening with the Oblivions? And
I knew about Jack O, Harlan T. Bobo.
You knew about all that?
I would see their names in the paper.
But you were too young to get into the shows.
I was playing shows more east at like Newbies. Neil's in Midtown would let us play an 8 p.m. show.
What band?
Copper Possum. That was my band from sixth grade. Copper Possum was an antique mall as you make your way through Mississippi down to Florida.
Oh, it was an actual place?
It was an actual place, the Copper Possum Antique Mall.
Sounds like Def Leppard, and Copper Possum.
Right?
You know?
Yeah.
And before that, we had named Copper Possum Silent Cal, which was a nickname for Calvin Coolidge. And there is actual VHS tape. It's the worst band name.
Silent Cal.
There's, well, thank you for saying that, because there's a VHS tape of our first gig ever. We're doing like six originals, Break On Through by The Doors, whatever. And you can hear our, like, it's our first show I've ever played in a venue. It was at Reedmeister's on Park. The day we plan it. Same building. But it became Reedmeister's.
The Daily Planet on... Park,
and Highland, basically.
Right.
It became Reedmeister's for like a couple years.
Did not know that.
We played there, and there's this VHS tape of us getting up there, and my friend Ben Church, who we still play with in various bands, he was like, "Hey, y'all, we're Silent Cow." But C-O-W, you know, Silent Cow, play on words. And you can hear my Uncle Jay go, "Did he say Silent Cow? That's the worst band name I've ever heard in my life." That starts off the footage of my first show ever. So we needed a new name.
Yeah, that's really bad.
My brother was like, "Call it Copper Possum," because he saw the sign on the way to Florida. Child.
So you were allowed to play in bars when you were 13, 14?
Yeah, they would clear. We'd play at 7 or 8, and they would clear us all out by 10 and let all the drinkers come in, and all the parents would come pick up the kids. The parents didn't know we were all boozing in the parking lot, though. So there's like a whole Bonnaroo lot going on outside of Neil's. And if a parent, we saw one of our parents or friends' parents park, everybody would hide all the shit and watch them walk into Neil's and then start partying again. So... my sister reminded me that I got busted by my sister. I walked right past my mom, but it was the middle of July, and I had a parka on. It's like 98 degrees outside, and I've got this Columbia winter puff jacket on, just stuffed with like 24 natural lights.
Oh my god!
So like we were kind of partying.
Was it a teal parka?
Cherry red.
So he grew up quick. That's probably why we make sense together.
Yeah.
I grew up slow. I mean, when I was 13, I was listening to Hall & Oates in my bedroom, you know, playing with Star Wars figures. Yeah, I had a chapstick collection.
Did you?
Yeah. They were all used because I had to try them all out.
I had an empty whiskey bottle collection.
Yeah, you had them.
It's really odd that two of my launch pad venues both burned down, Buccaneer and Neil's.
Right.
Those are like where I played more gigs.
I think it's weird that the Buccaneer burned down.
Right.
That thing was waiting to go.
Yeah.
The little bit of time I was in Nashville, one of the few times I went out to go see a band, I went to the wrong basement. And I spent $20 to get in there and then realized, I'm in the wrong place.
Oh, it's terrible.
And then by the time I found the other basement, the band that I wanted to see was done. Mm. And I spent another cover.
Bummer.
Yeah. That I guess that's all my fault.
I want to play another Turnstile song here, if I might. We're here for the kids to listen to the Turnstiles.
Yeah.
All right, what do you want to play next?
It's a hit in 30 countries. Rise of My Tears.
Chill in place of love we had. Blinked my eyes goodbye, you magic year. Feel the rise of my tears. Feel the rise of my tears. I turn to see your blood and then you walk away. Compromising my fears, I feel the final crush. What you took away. You said to me, Buckeye sport, it just won't be enough. What am I when I'm without my peers? Feel the rise of my tears. Feel the rise of my tears. I turn to sea of blood and you walk away. Compromising my fears, I feel the final crush, what you took away.
That was Rise of My Tears by The Turnstiles, written by Graham Winchester.
And that was with a drum machine.
Kind of about, like, you know, that thing in Memphis where it's, like, kind of a little big city. And if you, like, it's kind of like a fictional account of, like, you break up with somebody, but you still have to see them at all the same shows. I grew up a big fan of the band who we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. Oh, Levon Helm.
Yeah, and Rob, and Robbie Robertson was so good at penning lyrics that were... as Dylan was, you know, like a story.
As good as Dylan, you say?
I think as far as painting the story, you know, take even The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down, you know, he took information about the South that Levon Helm had given him and wrote this fictional sort of like Civil War story, you know, but...
Where was Robertson from?
Canada.
Okay.
So he really put himself in the Southern boy.
So he's further north than Dylan.
Right.
Yeah. Or John Fogerty, born on the bayou.
Right. California cat writing about the bayou, you know, just...
From Ohio.
And I try to do a similar thing where, like, I'll sneak Easter eggs of deeply personal stuff in.
We should try to write songs about being born, like, in Connecticut.
Right? Go Huskies.
Yeah. Let's drop this Memphis stuff.
It's the Husky, like, rock. I write a lot in major key, but a lot of my lyrics are really sad, so it's a weird, bittersweet thing. I mean, I think that's a very Paul McCartney-ish thing to do. It's also a very Greg Cartwright-ish thing to do.
Yeah.
There's people that do it. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just...
How many instruments do you play? Like, you play more than just drums.
I do drums, keys... bass and guitar in that order, probably.
Have you ever recorded just everything all by yourself?
A solo record. Definitely. I just did.
Okay, a solo record. Mm-hmm. Oh, tell me about that.
And it's called Nobody Waters the Flowers. I did it during the pandemic.
Yeah.
That was in a major key, probably, right?
But I put it out online, and then this Red Curtain Records label that Scott McEwen, Patrick, and Sean started out of Memphis Magnetic.
Okay.
They wanted to put it on vinyl and like re-release it, so we just did a release party for that. But it's been online and all that crap for over a year, but now it's a vinyl. And
Dennis, can we get a link on that too?
Sure.
Make a note of that.
Nobody Waters the Flowers.
Yeah, it's on Apple Music, Spotify, my Bandcamp. Other people. I'll tell you one thing about the solo record. I got a solo record, Turnstiles record tie-in. They both start with my song Vampire, and I didn't even mean for that to happen.
So young and so broke. So many days working 9 to 9. So many nights filled with Seagrams and smoke. She was working the rodeos, met every bucker from coast to coast. She caught the eye of every honest guy, but there was one that she liked the most. I could see it in her empty stare. Well, nobody waters the flowers, 'cause this house just ain't home. I guess it's back to hammers and nails since our love began to roam. Nobody sweeps up the cobwebs, ain't nobody
welcome sign in front of the door. Nobody waters the flowers anymore. I'd be a hypocrite to not admit I was guilty of the same old thing. Right after work, I'd drive to Evergreen. Open mic nights for the brand new scene. I met a girl there named Rosalie. She played Estella and she sang so sweet. One night we sang a song in harmony. As they applauded, she kissed my cheek. Stare. Nobody waters the flowers, 'cause this house just ain't home. I guess it's back to hammers and nails since our love began to roam. Nobody sweeps up the cobwebs, ain't no welcome sign in front of the door. Nobody waters the flowers anymore.
I got divorced with the first wife that didn't care that I joined that band.
What year did you get divorced, Seth?
2005. And that's when miraculously at the same time I'd met this wild woman named Courtney, and she convinced me to start a punk band, which we did, called The Alibis. She's a very talented singer that sat in with the Hawaiian band that I was in. And I knew she was good because when we were finished with the song, I apologized to her about how the band wasn't good enough for her singing. This woman can actually sing. This is terrible. I wanted a terrible singer
you liked
to
her.
Sit in with this band.
You say that to a girl you like.
Yeah. Well,
let's play one more Turnstile song, or maybe a few
sound
more.
Sound of My Tears. Sorry?
Which one?
No, I said Sound of My Tears.
I thought that was a Turnstile song.
I'm just being a nut.
Right. Okay, so what's next on the old Turnstiles?
How about
Suicide Surf Break.
Just
we in Wilmington?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Coco, you met Coco?
Yeah, and left my
heart and
wife, and then ended up dating. And
wait, you left your ex-wife?
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
And then the Alibis.
We started a new band, and it was fun. I had a connection in Nashville to move to Nashville. These folks from LA that were moving to Nashville at the same time I was wanting to get out of Wilmington. All right, here's my connection. Eddie Van Halen's guitar tech. So I quit my job. And then we sold our house and made plans to move, Coco and I, and our two children. Mm-hmm. But the night before we left Wilmington, I had a gig to open up for a band that I'd never heard of called Jacko and the Sheiks on a Monday.
Street Town.
And the band that I was in, Deadly Lo-Fi, were set to to open up for them. So that day, I told Courtney, I'm not playing this gig. It's Monday. Nobody goes out on a Monday. And we're moving tomorrow. I'm not going to stay up late playing some crap gig. And she said, well, wait, who are you opening up for? I said, some band called Jacko and the Sheiks. And she said, Jack Oblivion? I'm like, what? Jack, what? Yeah, I guess so. And she said, oh, that's Jack Oblivion. You from the Oblivions? And I said, I don't know. She said, they're amazing. You have to play this gig. So I was like, ah. So I played the gig, but then at that show, met Jack and Graham and Frank and Keith.
Yeah.
And we all, you know, we matched up personality wise. And then they had me sit in with them on the sax, which was a blast. At the end of the show, Jack said, oh, it's too bad you don't live closer to Memphis. And I said, well, actually, I'm moving to Nashville tomorrow. And he said, oh, we're playing in Nashville day after tomorrow. Exit in. Come sit in with us again. So I moved and then sat in with them again at this bigger club in Nashville, which was a blast. We drank a lot of tequila. It was amazing. So much fun, which was right before Gonerfest. It was like, I got to get out of Nashville and move to Memphis. So we had a 6-month lease on our apartment in Donelson. We rode it out, throwing our money out the window on a crazy lease on a crap apartment, and then bought a house in Cooper Young, and here we are.
You're right. These guys don't immediately offend me from a personal security level. I'm going to be friends with them.
But we
all gelled, you know?
Yeah, well, this was
you're
a group,
like the long-lost member.
And
the
first gig I played, like, actually as a resident, because I drove down here all the time within those 6 months and played shows with them and stayed at Jack's apartment. But the first weekend I was here was the David Bowie benefit at Minglewood Hall, which was massive.
We were there.
Mm-hmm. It was so great because...
Wait, the first weekend you were here?
Yeah.
So that's when I met you.
I moved here on a Tuesday, and that was the Saturday or Friday.
You had already been here forever.
Yeah, well, I'd been here a lot before then, but I actually lived here that
weekend. You were sort of the latest mystery rocker to show up, you know.
He was like summer of 2015 through December 2015.
But Memphis is so kind to newcomers.
Yeah.
It's
in
Athens and other cities, music cities that I've lived in. If you're a new guy on the scene, they're like, what?
Well, okay, wow. All right. Now, I was curious about how you got here and when you got here and when you met Graham and...
Yeah, it's pretty wild. That's
the
story.
The first shows we played in Memphis at DK, I think I like threw you in my car and started playing. What was it, Jesse Winchester for you?
I
don't know.
Played me one of the tearjerker songs.
We had like an early moment where
I'm
like,
sitting there going, "What's wrong with this guy?"
I'm like, "Get in the car now! I have to play music for you."
I don't want to cry right now. I want a tequila shot.
It's a minor six. What's going on here? Well, when did you guys decide to just have the twosome?
I guess it's been 5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we had a gig with a more than twosome, right? And we didn't want to give it up. So You said, let's just do it, the two of us.
Yeah.
And we did, and it was great.
It worked. And we started off doing a thing that was like, I think, a delusional fantasy of mine where we would switch off playing drums and guitar.
Mm.
But I'm just such a not comparable guitar player compared to Seth.
Kind of like the Oblivions used to do that.
And I would just get on the guitar and be like, oh my God, he should just be playing guitar.
And yeah, I and I wasn't that good on the drums.
So that lasted. You're a great drummer. It's like, and you're a lot greater at drums than I am at guitar.
No, no, everybody would be like, okay, wait, when are they going to go back to their real
So let's play another Turnstile song. What was one of the other ones you wanted to play at this point?
I think maybe Over You.
Over You?
Which I think is one of Coco's faves.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, it's a great song.
Medication sweating, knocking feelings back that I've been dreading, reminiscing over better times with you. Broken glass bottle, never breathing, always in full throttle. Should have spent all of the extra time with you. Well, look at me, look at me. I'm lonely as can be, but I'm over you, at least. That sadness in my smile might last a little.
Okay, that was Over You by the Turnstiles. What's the story on that? Is there a story on
it's
that?
It's kind of like it's the narrator, is the character in it, is saying that they're over somebody, but you can just tell by the vibe. And
do
the
you
lyrics.
Write it?
Mm-hmm. You can just tell they're not really.
You're writing them. A lot of songs about heartbreak, breakups.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And they're poignant. Yeah.
Before you got married.
I wrote that one after marriage. No, I've written the Over You is written during COVID, but. And then there's all that. Then there was all the COVID stuff, and then a lot of the protests and police involved.
Oh yeah,
violence
all
and,
that.
And there was so much to write about, and mm-hmm. so much heartbreak to draw from. Really, you know, mm-hmm. there's beautiful stuff too, but it's just I was writing. Like,
that's where the
was Graham playing guitar and singing in the bathtub.
Oh yeah, the bathtub.
Yeah, I put on a suit and played in my bathtub.
Yeah, Graham did like, which I, you it was know, like for 3 hours and the water got cold.
Yeah.
Do we need to cue that?
The water got cold, and then I had one of my solo vinyl on the side of the tub, mm-hmm. but the humidity made the artwork bleed, so the water turned green, like my album cover. So I'm sitting in this cold swamp water after 3 hours.
Cold green water.
It's really funny.
Teal.
It's really funny. I heard a
teal.
Dude,
yes.
I heard a dude like talking shit about the fact that I did that on.
talking shit.
He was talking shit on social media. And Frank and Keith like defended me, but this guy like 2 years ago was like, remember when that Midtown hipster got in his bathtub to try to get attention and was begging for Cash Apps while playing a show? And like Frank and Keith defended me and sent me screenshots of the thread. But it's funny because more than one person thought that that was some elaborate plan. I decided I was going to do a show in the bathtub probably 10 minutes before I did it. You know,
I believe that.
Just me being weird and random.
It was great.
Yeah. I think 3,000 people watched it or something.
Oh, it was fun.
If you'd been naked, 3 million would have watched it.
That guitar playing sucked. The guitar got wet. So every time I move my hand at all, there's this enormous squeak. It's unlistenable. Cool.
Squeak like Burning For You, Blue Oyster Cult.
Yeah.
Just needed the cowbell.
I hear the squeaks and the chords. Yeah. What's going on here?
John Bonham's kick drum pedal.
What's coming up ahead for you guys?
Shows in back in North Carolina, in Wilmington. And
Full Circle.
I haven't played there in a long time. It's weird. I'm starting to have dreams about Wilmington. I had one today.
Whoa.
Two of them.
That's crazy.
Ridiculous.
You took an afternoon nap and dreamed of Wilmington.
Well, I noticed a Wilmington resident reached out to the Turnstiles messenger. And
I've been getting lots of people saying, well, I didn't know you were coming. Why didn't you tell me?
It's been booked for like a week. Yeah.
Right. You're like, you don't
where
know.
Where are you staying?
You don't. You're like at Candyland, of course.
It's been booked for a week and it's still months out and it's people are mad.
You don't remember why I left.
Real quick, let's talk about the European tour, and then let's play a song. I don't know how many songs we have, or I guess we could play anything we want. But talk about where you played, stories and stuff, and just real quick before we get out of here.
Oh, we could play Lost in Prague, which is on the list.
Oh, there you go.
We played in Prague, and we kind of got lost.
Yes. Physically and emotionally.
Actually, we did get lost.
All right, hold on. Well, let's play Lost in Prague, and when we come back, we'll talk about Europe.
Let's go.
Okay, that was Lost in Prague by the Turnstiles off Turnstiles 2, which is a Black and White release. What year did that come out? That came out...
22.
But I wrote the song when I went to Prague initially, which was 2008.
Okay.
And Coco and I got lost.
Oh, I thought it was you guys getting lost in Prague.
Well, you know what? It's hilarious.
Another full circle.
I wrote it about getting lost in Prague, and then lo and behold, Graham and I got lost in Prague. Yeah.
Prague is it's MF-er of a city.
Yeah. If you don't get lost, there's something wrong with you.
Right. Like, I can't imagine.
You have a really good iPhone.
You mean the streets are ancient?
If I'm an English-speaking American and I go to Prague and I feel at home, that's not normal. Like, yeah, the signs aren't in English.
And a lot of folks...
There's not a lot of English-speaking, though, is the difference. In Germany, you can talk to anybody, but I feel like they don't really
want to speak English. I'm pretty sure...
So many tourists there. Yeah. It was also kind of a peak moment of our fatigue.
We made it out of the old city, but we were trying to figure out where we were going after the old city. I was wanting to get a motel room, but
So usually, like, when bands from Memphis have gone over, they have a guide that takes them. I've heard Jack talk about this.
We usually have a guide,
tour manager,
Dutch guy.
Yeah.
We were just us in a Hyundai rental SUV.
I figured it's just the two of us. Yeah. We don't want to spend half our budget on a guy.
Sure.
So, but.
And that was the right call, though. It was, I think.
We saved a lot of money, but yeah, it was a little bit stressful every now and then.
Well,
and
set, we
got
especially
it. Since when my eyes started going
His eyes started going, and then I can't drive a stick shift, and... Yeah, it was a manual transmission. So Seth was doing all the driving.
So you're saying when you rented the car, you had no choice but to get a straight shift?
Well, it was a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
Aha. Uh-huh.
You know, we're pinching pennies. I like driving.
Yeah.
Well, how many dates did you have?
12.
And guarantees?
Yeah.
So you had budgeted the whole thing out. You got free food, right? And all that
free
kind
food,
of stuff.
Free food, free accommodations. Yeah. Head perfume. Did a
right,
really
with,
good job
with Black and White.
We were over
Renee.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you
yeah,
wanted
yeah.
to come back with $1,000, right? At least $2,000 each.
We wanted to pay for our tour.
Yeah, and this first time we did spend money on the drums, which are now anytime we need them. We spent money on some CDs and stuff, but like
and
next
the hookahs.
Time, yeah, the hookahs.
Oh, the hookahs.
The next time, you'll never know. No, but the next time we're more set up to profit even more. For one thing, we've already got Turnstiles 2 copies there, and we'll hopefully get more guarantees because now they know we kind of rock. You know,
right.
They were blown away.
There were a lot of little towns that, of course, had never heard of us. Well, actually, everywhere we went, they hadn't heard.
They knew it. Some of them might have known we played with Jack.
We made a really good impression. And at the end of the night, every place we played really wanted us to come back. I mean, even so, we played in Vinbola.
Vinbola.
So our last show.
Accidentally, because you were lost.
Our last show was in Dresden. We played Dresden, then we were going to play
Dresden. Wait, hold on. I thought we bombed Dresden. I thought it was off the map.
I know. That's ironic, isn't that weird?
Yeah. Mm. And Renee loves to, like, unashamedly talk about it humorously, and we're just like, we turn red.
Renee, head perfume.
Oh, yeah. Guy. He's like, look at us. Two Americans and a German actually getting along after the bombing.
Oh, brother,
and
you're like, awkward.
We were told not to bring it up, and he's bringing
it up. I think 80 years ago, I think it's okay.
Right.
So our last show.
There's been some time.
Our 10th.
Wilmington, on the other hand, you wouldn't want to, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
11th,
I mean, Augusta.
11th show out of 12 shows was in Dresden, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the folks that saw us in Vinbola, which was, an hour and a half away?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All got on a train and came up and showed up.
Wow.
At the Dresden show. It was fantastic.
And then the second Dresden show had just as many people as the first Dresden show, which was nice to play the same city twice in a week. And
yeah, it's like all of a sudden
we felt like we were
regulars because we recognize all these people. But hell, we'd only been over there for a couple of weeks.
And the Vinbola
guy. So, of course, we have to go back.
And the owner of the club in Vinbola is a true rocker, really hip to all the Memphis stuff, you know. And he, at the end of the night, you boys, after you pack up, you must come have a ceremonial goodnight beer with me. And like, we just buddied up. And
was that a metaphor?
And he was just talking about rock and roll. And he kept going, we are dust compared to you Memphians.
Did you guys go to Hamburg? Or
yep. Yeah, we had a great show there.
Oh, wow.
Played in a Jens Keller. Good punk show.
Yep.
And got accosted by prostitutes the whole way there.
Yep.
Hey, Hamburg hasn't lost it yet.
They all looked like the Kardashians, though. It was crazy. All the
lots of lip injections and lots plastic of surgery.
Somehow that's supposed to be attractive.
Plastic people.
Well, it's
weird.
It's terrifying. Because we toured there in 2014.
Where are you going?
Yeah.
Away from you.
Like Burger King and to the show. Ah.
Straight to bed.
Yeah.
Yeah, anywhere.
Yeah.
I'm terrifying. A married dad. No, but
it'd be more sexy to hump my pillow.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it's weird. Like, we toured.
Those aren't pillows.
I played in Hamburg. I played in Hamburg 2012, 2014, 2016.
Yeah.
And walking by the red light district. Yeah, the girls didn't look like that. That was a recent phenomena. That
yeah.
They all,
right.
So much plastic surgery and lips the size of that mixer, you know.
Yeah. Did you play Berlin or
no, we had a Berlin show at Wild at Heart, and then I think it's sad because I think the venue and Renee from Head Perfume wanted us there, but I think we didn't quite fit the bill, and probably the other bands were like, maybe this isn't a match of our genre.
Did you get a feel?
But they want us back at Wild at Heart when we go back.
Well, so. Cool. Did you get a feel in Germany that, well, of course, you're in the rock and roll culture, so it's not really maybe the mass culture, obviously, but
right.
I was in Berlin a long time ago. I was on showing movies, but I was in this rockabilly world where everything seemed to be, you know, like fashion and rockabilly, very, very astute, you know, people who are elitist rockabilly, like people, and the bartenders all looked like they were rockabilly people.
That's a very Northern Europe thing.
Yeah. We saw
Scandinavia.
That, we saw that more in Denmark when we played
still
with Jack at the Denmark Festival. What was that?
There's a lot of that in Finland, Norway, Denmark.
What was that festival we played? Just like
Gutter Island.
Gutter Island.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like I'm
so
in there going
rockabilly.
I'm in there going, I'm not worthy, and I'm like, oh wait, I'm from Tupelo.
Right. Like,
yeah. It's like you're the real deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't spend $300 on a pearl snap shirt.
Well, it's almost the way like Dallas was, you know, or maybe even Tokyo is in some parts. Mm-hmm. You know.
It was nuts. It was intimidating.
I missed that gig. So I was in Malmo.
You know what? Maybe what you guys actually were encountering were teddy boys that were mummified or something.
Dude.
Whoa.
Hey, that's a film right there.
That's a film.
I know. You can't get much cooler than teddy boys.
Mummified teddy boys. The Beatles wanted to be teddy boys.
Do you guys do any Eddie Cochran or Gene Vincent over there?
No, we did some Carl Perkins, Billy Lee Riley.
I've heard the Europeans go apeshit when you play Eddie Cochran or Gene Vincent.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Just saying.
They went apeshit when we did, any old Sun stuff.
Carl Perkins. We did.
Oh, well, you could expect that.
We played Stop and Think It Over by Compulsive Gamblers a few times.
God.
Oh, and Michael, real quick, Michael Donahue told me when he interviewed Carl Perkins, George Harrison called him on his cell.
What now? Say that again.
Michael Donahue got to interview Carl Perkins once.
Yeah.
And George Harrison called him on either his home or his cell phone at the time.
Called Carl.
Yeah, like Carl was like, hello, and blah, blah, blah. And he was like, that was George.
Hello.
That was George, yeah. That was George Harrison.
Saying, wait, how did you play that G going into C7? Yeah.
What's the 7 chord again?
So have you guys heard of Bethel Springs?
I've heard of that. What is that?
So Bethel Springs is up toward the county state line with Tennessee and Mississippi and all that. Mm-hmm. And I had the pleasure of talking to this lady at the Mid-South Con, the sci-fi con, appropriately enough, because rockabilly and sci-fi are just like, you know, same time period.
Mm-hmm. That's funny.
And she is a tourism director in the town where Buford Pusser is from, which goes back to our Eddie Bond conversations with Joey Killingsworth last podcast. But she's like, and we're doing all this great stuff in Bethel Springs. Bethel Springs is where it's at. People love to come to, Europeans come to Bethel Springs. And I'm like, whoa, 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 wait a minute. What's Bethel Springs?
Yeah.
And she goes, well, that's the first time that Carl met Elvis at Bethel Springs when they had a rockabilly show together.
Mm.
And I'm like, dong, 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 dong. I'm like, okay. So that is considered the birthplace of rockabilly because Carl met Elvis at Bethel Springs.
What? That's nuts.
That's what she said. Now you would think, but Carl was hanging out at Sun, right? But maybe he never met. We're talking 50. We must be talking 54 here.
I believe it, but it's just wild that people would go ape shit over something like that. But
well, they've got their historic marker. They have shows there.
And that's why when you're a Memphis teeny little band like the Turnstiles and you go to play Europe for the first time, people show up because the flyer says, from Memphis.
Right.
Okay, so we're going to play. What are we playing?
One of many U's. Y-O-U-S.
And this is being recorded, and it's going to come out on something.
It's recorded already, and it's going to come out on our next record called Turnstiles Cloned, where we play other instruments other than the drums and the guitar.
I guess if it wasn't recorded, we wouldn't be playing it right now.
True.
Well, or we'd be waiting. The podcast would have to wait till it's recorded.
So our next release is going to be...
By that time, we'll be broken up.
Right.
We won't even be together.
Never!
Screw that jerk!
I'm never letting
Winchester.
You go.
I'm going back to Wilmington.
That teal-ass motherfucker.
I'm already back in Wilmington. I'm back with my first wife.
I'm back in Billy Goat, baby, in the broccoli.
Oh, Copper Possum, here we come. All right, here we go.
Shot shenanigans turn me off. Everyone would rather that the bed be soft. What are you gonna say? It doesn't go your way. The power of the pedestal you put in place. The whole wide world sees the egg on your face. One of many you. The world has plenty of you. One of many you. The world has plenty of you. Too much.
You've just heard Mike McCarthy interviewing Seth Moody and Graham Winchester of the Turnstiles on the Black and Wyatt Records podcast. Be sure to watch the Turnstiles mini-doc, Grief Leech, by Mike McCarthy on the Black and Wyatt Records YouTube channel. Turnstiles vinyl records are available at the Black and Wyatt Records website. Join us next time for the Black and Wyatt Records podcast.